Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Woman Bean. Oh, I haven't said that in such a long time.
It feels like the first time.
Yeah,
I feel like a virgin again.
I don't even know what to see on this podcast. Like, I'm just like jittery. Like, I'm having the same nerves that I did
the first time we recorded.
Yeah, on our first episode. But what's up, guys? First of all, we'd like to apologize. It has been a while.
Apologies for the delay.
So sorry for this delay. We are so sorry, dearie. Life has just been lifing.
Yeah, actually.
Life has been lifing. Osefan has taken additional roles in her workplace. I mean,
let it be known that I really dislike this girl. I really,
really do. I'll
forgive you.
All right, I'll take your forgiveness. I'll take your forgiveness. Okay, so today, our childhood and how it was growing up. So my first question to you is, how will you sum up your childhood in one word? Like, if you could.
In one word.
Yeah. Or a few words, maybe like a sentence, so that we don't restrict you.
Sadly, because I need to start English. But let's see. I would say it was, in one word, I'll call it a fruit punch.
Fruit punch.
Yeah.
Fruit punch is nice. You're going to explain that in a minute.
Yeah.
But if I was to sum up my childhood in one word, I would say, I can't use one word actually, but I'll use a phrase. I'm too young.
I'm too young.
I would sum it up. Like, my whole childhood, I couldn't help but think, like, am I not too young for these things that, like, my parents are asking me to do, that I'm being exposed to? I actually just felt too young.
Too young.
Yeah, so tell us about the fruit punch. I'm very curious.
Fruit punch? Yeah, because, I mean, so it's a blend of, like, different fruits, right? So yeah. I had sour moments, right? I had very adventurous moments.
Okay.
You know, I had moments where I felt crushed.
Wow.
Yeah, and then I had moments where I would bust out. And then I had moments where... I don't think that there was... Apart from when I had birthdays and when... let me see. When I actually go out and someone is saying, yeah, really enjoying or when we go for like there are very few moments where I did feel like a child.
Yeah.
And by feeling like a child, I mean where
enjoyed your child.
Enjoyed being a child. Because I grew up with adults, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like I wasn't really, really a child. And then I had a younger one. So it was more like my being a baby, you know, just text me like a baby, at least. Was taking away from me, because for every time I tried to be a child, like, you're being rude, you're being spoiled, you're very spoiled. You're
not,
like, anytime when I'm not spoiled. Well, yeah.
So when you're not fried rice.
I didn't know that. But yeah, so it was, it had like different blends, but I did have like a, it was very adventurous. I'm not going to lie. Maybe because, you know, I had adults and every now and then I wanted to be an adult.
Yeah.
Be an adult, not to take responsibility, but be an adult to be free.
Yeah. Independence.
And the fact that there was this thing where you couldn't talk back to an adult. Like, you were never right.
Adults were so glorified. Adults were glorified and magnified.
I wanted to be right for all, you know, intents and purposes. But it was very adventurous because I was quite rebellious as well. I was quite rebellious. I thank God that I did have a mind of my own as a child.
Okay.
You know, every now and then, I mean, that was ambushed, but you know, I think that, you know, that helped. That has helped me
build
as a person.
Build your confidence. Yeah.
That's helped me as a person. I mean, I chop punishment.
You stubborn child like
my physical strength.
I expect nothing less.
I chop punishment, chef. But yeah.
Yeah. So I started school very early. Yeah. And I think that was like the footprint of my whole childhood. I ended up doing a lot of things earlier than I should. Mm-hmm. You know, at the age of 4, I could read a newspaper and pronounce very big words. So I was almost like I was a star girl. I just, like, academically...
Smart kid.
Like, academically, I was okay. you know, and I was doing things that people my age shouldn't. So as, you know, now the Niger way, they would just be pushing you like, ah, this one does not need primary one. She does not need primary five. She does not need JS two. You know, so at the end of the day, I ended up graduating secondary school before I was even 14.
Yeah. Oh, that's long.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that generally, I don't even need to say more than that. I just was exposed to things before I should have. And I was exposed to them because my peers were being exposed to them, because the people around me just assumed I was older because I was in, okay, and just one, and I'm a small girl again.
Not even
I'm
caring what age.
Yes.
Not even caring what age, yeah.
Yeah, nobody really cared about the actual age, you know, because my mind was already exposed. Like, even as a young girl, like growing up at home, there were certain things I was able to understand quite early on. So the innocence that a child should have had, like that childlike innocence, was almost never there. I was used to say, like, I enjoyed some parts of being a child, like Omo, Disney Channel, Cartoon Network, Capri Sun, Rabina. Those are the highlights. Yeah. But, you know, there was also, like, I was exposed to alcohol too early. Just things that a child should not be around, really. Yeah. Like, even going to college, everybody else was 18, 17. I was coming in at 14. And there was night parties, you know, I had to get a fake ID because they couldn't even allow somebody my age to enter a club. Yeah. But all of that just sort of, if I remember the most recurring theme, it was just feeling like, I'm too young for this. Which is weird because now I feel like I'm too old for everything. And I'm still young, you know. But yeah.
I'm just a child.
I'm just a girl. The next question actually is your relationship with your parents while you were growing up.
So let me start from the positive.
Always good to start on a good note.
Yeah, I'll start on the positive. I think recently I was thinking about where I learned trust from.
Yeah.
Right. And I realized that my mom was the first person who made me recognize or come to the awareness of what that word was. So my mom used to do this thing where, I mean, she was literally always like a high flyer, career and everything. So, one time she was heading a department and they would give her like a huge sum of money for like the month or the year or thereabouts. I'm not quite sure what. And it was such a huge amount.
Wow.
Like, I mean, I'm talking hundreds and hundreds of thousands.
Wow.
And as a child, like, she would literally tell me, like, go on, this is so amount, right? Go and keep this for me. Go and hide it for me. You know, so she doesn't touch it, right?
Yeah.
And I would go and keep, and this is me in custody of ridiculous amount that I'm sure as a child, if I was sold, it would have, if I would have been sold for that amount. But, and this is me being in custody of money that can change my life.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, and still not being given money that I thought I needed to go to school to even buy stuff to eat. So imagine your mom giving you like 5 naira or 10 naira, but you have like, it was so angry. But guess what? Couldn't steal the money,
obviously, because when she you're like, raised like that, bro. You're raised like that.
It was recently that I was actually thinking, like, Jesus, it never even occurred to me
that you don't need to settle for this 5 naira.
Like, it was just she trusted me, and she trusted me to hide it enough because, I mean, there were quite a number of people in the house, so she trusted that, you know, I had enough sense to know where to keep the money that nobody else, you know, would have any access to it.
Yeah,
and trusted that even if I'm not giving you the money, enough money that you need,
you still won't touch my money.
You still won't touch, like, not on your track.
You scope.
Who give you that confidence?
I always say it. Scope.
But interestingly, I realized that because of that level of trust, right, it just made me feel like my mom trusted me a lot.
Yeah.
And subconsciously. Well, you know, and I think that just, like, permeated every other thing. So even in school, I knew that, this woman, like, regardless of whatever stubbornness or wilding that I was doing, my mom trusted me. Like, you know, my mom trusted me. It was just, you know,
a theme,
you know, subconsciously in my head. So, yeah. But relationship with her, I would say it was very interesting because it went from being, I mean, everybody thought I was like my mom's baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I wasn't. But they thought. You know, it went from
mommy's gay.
You know, it went from being that way to teenage boys coming in between.
Oh,
and it just went south. But another thing that had was the ability to express, right?
Yeah.
So for some reason, I mean, my mom used to be like this. I mean, she tried to be strict, and it was very obvious that you're trying so hard.
Like, girl, you know you're not that you bitch. You know you're not that bitch.
It was quite obvious that she was trying so hard to be strict. Like,
yeah.
Why are you trying? Like, that's not you, girl. Stop it.
And you could be never yourself. You could never be that bitch.
But I mean, it worked. Maybe not. But yeah, so I would say that it wasn't, I don't know what a typical mother-daughter relationship is, you know. I mean,
is there a typical?
Yeah, I don't know if there is anyone, but I don't know. But I just know that we were two very separate beings.
Yeah.
And every time there was a conflict or a clash in our personalities, we have two very separate personalities. Yeah. Now I see some traits and similarities. But then, I mean, there's times that I literally sit her down and talk to her. Like, as a teenager, I'll tell my mom about how I am and how I'm not who she thinks, or I'm not going to be who she thinks.
You get mine.
You know, for some reason, right? And, I mean, there's like times where she'll, you know, show me shiggy. Like, it sticks as the word.
To say, why is Abby?
Yeah, but, and then every other person also thought that I was spoiled, right? Because for some reason, they felt like she was, like, they thought I was poor. And for me, I was like, no, like, people are not even pampering me anymore. Anyway, how do you? So it was very funny because what people thought wasn't how reality. I was. Yeah, it wasn't my own reality. Yeah. Right. For another person, it felt like, you know, and then when my mom travels, interestingly, I fall sick every time she travels and leaves me.
Oh.
Yeah. So it used to, like, it was just very, very
weird. Give it soulmate. It's giving soulmate.
Like, I'm actually not kidding. Like, every time she travels and leaves me, and that's how I knew that travels.
Yeah.
Because how can you not travel with me?
Yeah, that's what was making you sick.
Yeah, like, it wasn't. Sick. I realized every time she traveled, you know,
yeah,
I'd fall sick. And for some reason, for her, you know, it felt like a thing where I always have to, like, travel with her or something.
Oh.
So I don't know if it's a relationship. I've said a lot that I don't even know what I can call that relationship, but yeah. I just know that we had two very different personalities, and for some reason I knew that she had, like, expectations of what my character should look like.
Yeah.
Right.
And you were trying to show her, like, I'm not who you think I'm gonna be.
I was very clear.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll do a lot of things that
clearly
true that.
Yeah.
I ain't that girl. but we were good. We were good, actually. Yeah. We were good. I used to really write for her. She used to be aware for me, so it was good.
Oh yeah, so my relationship with my parents, my dad's only simpler. It was just, we just operated off of, we're very distant, both physically and emotionally. Mm. So Popsy was more like, it was just like a providing figure. Mm. So I give you good grades, you pay my school fees. It was very transactional in that way. Yeah. You know, we never had, like, I would say in the same way, like, I don't know what a typical father-daughter relationship. Mm-hmm. It was very, very contractual.
Mm-hmm.
For as long as I remained a good girl and I was passing book, we never needed to speak, to discuss, to have anything to do with each other. And vice versa, if I was to ever get in trouble, and maybe it's like something that's like out of my mom's hands, then my dad would come in as the disciplinarian and do what he needs to do. But my mom's relationship with mine was a little bit more like of a roller coaster,
mm-hmm.
because I also feared her, because mom, she slapped the shit out of me, so there's no way I would not fear her. I also feared her, but then I respected her.
Yeah.
But then I was also her partner in a way, because my dad wasn't like the most present partner.
Yeah.
So eldest daughter syndrome, you know, I also became like a co-mom. I'll bath my sisters, get them ready for school, you know, just normal, cook, make sure everybody is fine. When it's time to sleep, make sure everybody has had their shower. Mm-hmm. Like, just the normal eldest daughter, assistant mommy situation. So in that way we were partners, but that was the extent of it. It was just the doing.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily like that we had a relationship outside the doing. It was just, I had my responsibilities in the house. She had hers,
mm-hmm.
and we made sure that the house run. You know, if anybody needs to go to market, I'll go while she cooks, or maybe I'll cook while she goes, like wherever, you know?
Yeah.
But there was also the element of fear, because my mom, obviously, she was a Christian woman. She had principles. She had values. I mean, I was a bad girl. So we kept clashing, you know. And I think the fear of that my parents imparted in me, it made me a bit two-faced.
Mm.
Like, I used to say that when I was younger, I was a liar. I can lie and be shocked. I would lie like this. I'll be like, ah! I will lie, because I had gotten so used to putting on a mask for both of them. Like, I knew what they both expected from me.
Yeah.
And I knew that I was never going to give it to them. But I didn't have the confidence like you did to tell my mom, like, no, this is who I am. So instead, I just lied. Jesus. If the devil is the father of all liars, then I'm his first child. Because, And my mom hated that because my mom is very strong on loyalty. Yeah. Like, she's a Scorpio, so she's very, very strong on loyalty, and she needs to be able to trust that what you say is what you mean, you know, for her to deal with you.
Yeah.
So because of that, our relationship had a lot of bumps. Mm. There's a lot of times I know that I caused her pain and everything. So it made us very distant, you know. But that was when I was still a child.
Yeah.
As I began to grow up, when the cancer hit, our relationship changed a lot. Mm. I think we became closer than ever. That was when I started to know things about my mom that made me understand her. That was when she told me that the reason why she used to beat me that year is because I look like my dad. Mom, she exposed a lot of things. I was able to tell her a lot of things as well. Mm-hmm. I was able to tell her about, for instance, the time I was abused when I was a child. I could never tell her because I was so scared that, you know, because it was my fault. I was not meant to leave the house. I left the house. It happened. So why would I now come and expose myself? Mm-hmm. I left the house when I was not supposed to leave the house, you know? So, I mean, like, it evolved, you know, and then we became proper partners, I think, right? Before the end, but we became proper partners and we became very close and became guys. Similarly, I think my relationship with my dad has evolved. He has consistently shown that he wants to be a part of my life and he doesn't want, maybe it's midlife crisis to soon pass, but at least while he's still there, we've been exploring that. I've been trying to figure out in my process of healing now, the amount of room I can probably give him so that we could build a semblance of trust or some form of relationship at least, you know. But my parents are very, very, they were very peculiar. They're very different. Like, so I think they even taught me how to deal with people because Popsy was on this end of the spectrum and my mom was on this other end. So learning how to navigate both of them, I think that's where I get my interpersonal skills from because, like, it wasn't easy, Sha. But definitely I would say my relationship with my parents, mostly fearful, mostly pretentious, and then has evolved over time for sure. So the next one was, how was childhood like in the school environment?
Okay, so for me, I changed schools quite a number of times. I really liked my junior school. I really liked my junior school. I liked it because it gave me a lot of room to play. But it did.
I'm sorry.
It did.
And they play for school.
It did. I really liked my junior school. It was a white woman that owned it. And there's like a big field. Mm. I remember it so well. There's an apple tree that we plucked like pink apples from. There was a clay mound where you can go and like get clay from. We had that.
I'm posh school.
I'm coming. Before I now went to
Army school. We get snap, quarter.
Before I now went to Army school where my life changed forever.
Away. From grace to grass.
This one, to put on the grass. Because when I went to command, for like the first thing was a contempt. That's why I couldn't speak straight English anymore.
Jesus Christ.
I'm not kidding. It was not featuring. But, yeah. So, I liked my junior school.
Yeah.
I liked the foundation that I had there.
Yeah.
I didn't like that I had to change school. When I got into command, first of all, I just felt like, who is this Ajebo kid? Kind of loud, which Ajebo kid. I had been bullied in my house, as the youngest in the house. I'm an Ajebo, but going into that other primary school command now, like, literally changed my
perspective.
It's like kind of Banana Island and put me in like Balendera kind of thing. You know, I now became like, you know, very.
They took you to the ghetto.
Honestly, it was my English. My English changed.
Command.
English changed. And then also it had like a lot of, I don't know if it was the school. Yeah, it's the school environment. Okay, then I got involved in sports as well. I got involved in sports. You know, my grades were good.
Yeah.
My grades were good. And what else? School environment where I had a few, I was never really like a crew person.
Okay.
Yeah. I've never really been like a crew person I did have friends and a few people that worked together, but, you know, And I had quite a lot of freedom that I stole. I wish I left primary school earlier because I'd written common entrance, but somehow, I don't know what my mom saw, but she didn't want me to leave primary school earlier than primary six. I don't know, but I don't know what, I don't know. Every other person in my house did that.
Yeah.
Me. So, you know, now being head girl, I'm feeling like, you know, I don't know. People just thought that maybe I was being proud. But for me, it was just who I was.
Yeah, you're proud. No, I mean, we all know this.
No, I don't think so.
We all know this. Whether you agree or not.
I don't think so. And yeah.
It's not a wrong thing to be proud. It's wrong to be arrogant because that means you're not teachable.
No, if you say confident, yeah, but not proud.
Pride.
I'll say. Not taking pride in my childhood, okay? yeah. And then I think in primary school, so I was doing business.
Yeah.
That's true. I was doing business. I was selling chinchin, making chinchin and selling chinchin.
Mine was jollof.
I was doing, like, it's crazy because I asked my mom for capital. I use capital to buy the flour, do everything. I sell the chinchin, it's the profit, and go back and ask for capital.
So you're not doing business now. You're stealing from your mom. Which kind of business be that? You need a chop capital with profit. Don't kill me, please.
Oh my God. And then I used to go to the market by myself to buy beads. So I think those were the things that actually made me feel like I was quite free to move around. Because I'd go to buy beads. I would go and buy like knitting, this thing. I used to knit. So I really liked like creative stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'd make beads here and then sports and then almost being bullied, then joining like cultural dances. I used to be very quite involved. Yeah. So as a child, I liked like extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did like that. So, and I used to be selective about the ones I joined.
Yeah.
So that also helped me. Same thing in secondary school, junior secondary school as well. I was a very selective person.
Yeah.
I was very selective about becoming a kid. I was very selective about where you see me, where I'll go. Like, I don't even know why. Just very selective. I mean, I can't be
friends with just anybody.
Yeah, and I don't, like, I don't know. I just felt like people just poked me.
Yeah.
Right? And I just wasn't going to be bothered because I already had, like, people poking me in the house already. Yeah. So you couldn't do worse.
Facts.
So you couldn't do worse.
You're not rich.
Yeah, you couldn't do worse. So I think that school environment, childhood-wise for me, it was quite safe to a large extent.
Yeah.
Maybe because of the environment I was in, it was quite safe. It was a bit adventurous as well because when the driver doesn't come, you know, you have to, you know, go back home with friends. And sometimes the parents don't come too, so we all just work together, we look for short calls.
Yeah.
You know, all those things just
When Nigeria was a
country. Well, yeah. And then, you know, before they started kidnapping and all of that, we don't warn you. But it was quite safe. It was quite strict as well because, I mean, soldiers and all of that, you had to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And it was adventurous for you to want to break that rule and not be caught.
Yeah, like the forbidden fruit.
Yeah. It was adventurous for you to do that. It was bold for you to do that.
Yeah.
You know. It was also bold for you to chop in and not cry.
Udechi.
Can't cry now.
Chale.
It doesn't matter. Even if you suggest Ojo, you can't cry now. Yeah. Even if you are wailing inside, but you can't
even
cry.
If you are dead.
You can't cry.
Don't cry.
You can't
cry. That's also dust off your shoulder.
Yeah. Like you can't.
Dust off your shoulder. Is that all you've got?
Yeah, and then there was punishment for everything. So you bear the consequences. And then sometimes you can be smart as to how you... I think that's where interpersonal skills also came from, knowing how to be smart with certain teachers.
Yeah.
So that when you mess up, you know what to do.
Know what to do, know what to say.
Know what to say, yeah. And how they will speak up for you as well.
Yeah.
If another person is the one punishing you or falling to another person's head, that kind of thing. Yeah. So school environment was quite safe. It was quite strict, the punishments. But then there was also like activities that helped you just like grow beyond like academics, like extracurricular.
I had a similar experience, but like in reverse. So first of all, I did most of my young schooling here in Abuja. Mm. So Shining Star after Shining Star, then I went to Command. So, but at the age that I went to Command, it was like when I just started to even gain my own self-awareness.
Yeah.
So going to Command, I won't lie, I was a little bit spoiled. That's the whole reason my parents even opted for military school in the first place. They were like, she's spoiled, she's stealing, she's doing all the bad things that children should not do.
Yeah.
Let's take her to a strict environment, you know, where she can't do any of those things. And they were right. Command was like, I think what gave me a lot of my confidence Because I had to fight back.
Yeah.
I was not dealing with my age mate at all. I was like 8 years, 9 years, and people that were there were 21, 20. Like, I wasn't dealing with my spec at all. So, you know, I was left alone. So I just had to gain some sort of inner strength to fight back and to be able to stand up for myself, you know. But academically, like I've already said it, I was somewhat a star girl. I never really struggled with my academics. I can't lie. Maybe up until university was when I actually had my first encounter with academic struggle. But throughout my childhood, I never really struggled academically. After command, they now took me to Capital Science. And I entered there and I was asking boti kids. I was like, what's all this nonsense? Like, who told you that you're senior? You can call me by my name. I'm senior pal to you. Show why I mean me.
Oh my god.
But yeah, Capital Science was a private school. And so it was like a big switch for me.
Yeah.
I had very much come into like my tomboy phase at the time. I was very dominating. And so I think that actually repelled a lot of people from me. I didn't have a lot of friends. Yeah. I had like two people I was close to, but they also had like their cliques. So I was just close to them in the sense that I could go to their room after and chill with them and try not to like talk to their other friends because I don't like their other friends. But I was pretty much a lone wolf in a way. Like I was just on my own in a way. And it's because I had a very peculiar upbringing. Like I felt like my experience was not similar to a lot of the other girls.
Yeah.
The conversations were very light and I just felt out of place a lot of times. And actually, a lot of my schooling, I felt out of place. Like, you know, so I always had to be friends with people from other schools and, you know, or friends with my seniors.
Yeah.
I think the only extracurricular I went in was because they were like, Pearl can run, no. She does not run fast, but she can run for long. So they just put me in like 800 meters, 1,500 meters. Like, that's the highest form of any athletic anything that I did was that. Apart from that, I was always in the library. Like, I just like books. I still do. I still love books. And yeah, that was it. I was bullied small, but the bullying I did in return. When my sisters went to Capital Science, they was, are you my record sister? Ha! You will suffer. Because we suffered in their hands. Really? If you're listening to this, any of you that bullied my sister, don't let me catch you outside. I will beat you. But for me, it wasn't bullying because I was coming from military school and there's just certain things you can't say to your senior, certain things you have to do for your senior. Like, if I wanted to wash my clothes, you wash my clothes. So I didn't know necessarily that in private school is different. You wash your own clothes, you know. And I waited so long to enter SS. And just when I was about to enjoy my SS in command, that's when they now moved me to private school. So I had to let go of some of my frustration, you know. But it was good. I think school was another way that I strengthened my interpersonal skills again because I wasn't in the scene, I was able to observe. You know, I saw the cool kids, the not so cool kids, the nerds, the geeks. And wherever I was always able to blend in because I was a lone wolf. So I can hang out with the cool kids today. I can hang out with people that are in library tomorrow. I was always able to blend in. I always used to operate from a place of fear. So I used to do a lot of things just to get people to be my friends. Like, I was very desperate. I don't know how to explain it. It's just, it made me a people pleaser because I wanted people to like me. Like, you must like me, you must like me. You know, so I was dancing to a lot of tunes. I didn't really come into my own personality until after school, like after university. I didn't really come into myself and like to know who I was. So in a way, I wore a lot of hats. I was a geek. I was a cool girl. You know, like, let me give you an instance now. If, for instance, there's like a talent show and they're looking for who will rap Eminem's parts based on the tomboy that I am, I'm going to rap Eminem. But the next day, I'm in chapel leading praise. The other day, I'm doing athletics. Like, regardless of the box you put me in, and there's an advantage to that.
Yeah,
but the disadvantage is never being grounded and never actually having principles and values with which you live your life, which means anybody can get you to do anything. I was just a drifter. So, but that was like my school experience for sure. It was fun though. Good times. Hanging out with the boys. That was fun. I was always with the boys. Because nobody they toast me, so they saw. Nobody they toast me. Anytime a boy is talking to me, it's because he likes a girl that I know. So, but it was nice. I wouldn't change it for anything. I definitely wouldn't. So the next question is, how did you deal with peer pressure?
as a child, first of all, I didn't even know what that was to start with.
Obviously, yeah. You're not really aware that you're being... Yeah, it's hindsight.
I didn't even know what that was. To a large extent, I did have a mind of my own.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that came from my being stubborn, right? And that stubbornness wasn't even anything that had to do with school or with my friends. It just was where I was coming from.
Plus, it was encouraged.
Yeah.
Like, if your mom is able to entertain conversations where you're saying,
no, this conversation,
this is who I am.
It's not like it entertained.
No, because they didn't slap you now. Did she slap you while you were talking? It's entertained. Like, the fact that you can voice out.
Oh, that teenager at that time now.
Even still. The fact that you can go to your parent and voice out the fact that, this is who I am unapologetically.
If it's that.
Without fear of, this is, pa!
No, if it's that one.
Yeah.
If it's that one.
I
think that is also because my mom and I had clashes.
Yeah.
Even as a teenager. Yeah. Even as a, we had clashes. Like, we had clashes. And I've come to the point where, you know what? Like, I need to. We had clashes, you know. And the crazy thing, every time we had those clashes, I would still be large and just succumb.
Yeah.
So respect and fear of God.
Fear of God.
But dealing with peer pressure, I'd say that besides being stubborn, I was also an angry child.
Ooh.
Yeah. I had a bad mouth. You know, you literally do like the tiniest thing to me, and God damn it. Like, the aim of whatever I want to say to you was to ensure that deep down your heart is shattered. You know how you do like Mortal Kombat?
Finish him.
That was the only goal. Is that? And I don't mean to insult you.
Wickedness in high places.
Your family.
Wickedness in high places. Wickedness. Why are you so wickedness?
Or maybe it's because of the house I was in as well. I said I grew up amongst adults.
Yeah.
So you know, they had words.
Wow.
And I'm South.
Wow, to vengeance is the Lord.
I'm Niger. I'm South or South. They have mouth. They don't hold back on anything.
Fear Edo people.
They have mouth. Junior secondary school would have been where I would have had pressure. But because I was, I don't want to say picked on, my school life was very controversial. It was very controversial. There was always something to be said about me.
Mm.
There was always something. There was always something. I felt like I was misunderstood.
Yeah.
And I somewhat didn't care to even try to explain.
Yeah.
So because of that, in junior secondary school, I was in a mixed school. So we had rules where you sit in, right? I mean, girls would sit in a particular row. I can never forget. I literally went to camp pitch my tent amongst five other cool guys that were my friends. Like, yeah, in just three. Like, I literally went to pitch my tent there because first, I didn't even like gossip. I didn't like all these old girls talking about them.
Yeah.
I felt too old. Like, I felt like, kind of talk to that. Like, talk about something else in your life.
Understand it,
but yeah, so there wasn't 18 as to you trying to influence me.
Yeah,
it was more of I was leading whatever it was.
Yeah, you are the child that the parents be saying, please don't follow people to do bad, though. Yeah, like, yeah, they are following me. I'm the leader here, I'm the captain of this ship.
Yeah. And that's the thing, it's not like I looked like I was a leader,
yeah,
but. Damn, I wasn't even doing half of the things that these other people that nobody looked at were doing.
Yeah.
So it was that. I don't think that there was if the pressure would be like from what the guys then were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about like, well, football. I mean, guys, football club, this girl. I mean, just wondering like, why are they talking about this person?
Yeah.
And then just like saying, so this is what boys is talking about.
Yeah.
You know, versus prison break that time. 24,
yeah,
all those things where if they say then I'm going to go and watch it. So that the next time I'm all talking,
at least you have something to contribute. We're
all saying the same thing, that kind of thing. So that's that pressure. But the other one would be when
is that even peer pressure? Yeah. That's not peer pressure now.
Yeah. So I don't think
that's just like being wanting to be current.
Yeah. And then I know that in junior school then there were parties, you know, but for some reason I just didn't feel the need to do what you want me to do.
Yeah.
So it wasn't really a thing of not accepting peer pressure. It was just the fact that I did not feel the need to do what you want, because I already felt like I was being bullied at home by seniors to do what
they wanted you. So you were almost, it was almost like I'm taking my freedom.
Yeah, yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I said I was an angry child, because whatever I said, I couldn't unleash to the people that I'm looking up to.
You give those ones.
I'm going to give the people that have boosts.
They give me baths, I give me boosts.
So that's what it was. But senior secondary school is where the real pressure was. Because at that time, you know, you have like cliques, and then this was Lagos for crying out loud. So they have like cliques, you know, and I mean, I did feel into join one.
Yeah.
Because we had like cliques with names, actually.
Yeah. Is it cult?
Ah, but yeah. It was with names, you know.
Ariwa buddies.
I know. It was don't joke. Oh. This is talking about
cultism. That's where cultism starts from, you guys. Well,
interestingly, I've realized that it actually built bonds amongst these people.
Yeah.
That, you know, till now I see certain people together as real friends. Yeah. And another time, your reasons may not necessarily be
But whether you like it or not, the more time you spend around people, the more emotions are released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways, so then even like when people thought I was, or when I was approached, just because I mean we're all just wilding.
Yeah.
You know, I just didn't feel the need to join
one.
I just didn't feel the need to join one. I just never really felt the need to join one. So did we do the same things? Yes. Did we break rules the same way? Yes. But I don't know if it was pressure. It was just that I'm into. I wanted to like
get it.
Yeah, I wanted to explore. But yeah, yeah. So I think that's just it. The fact that I just didn't feel the need to do what you're doing. Like sometimes I feel like I even don't do just because
what somebody else is doing it.
Like, even if I want to, I'm like, no.
Somebody else is doing it.
Yeah. So for me, it was just that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was a good thing or not. But yeah.
It's a good thing, definitely. For me, it was the complete opposite. Like I said, I always had to bend
because
I didn't have friends, and I felt like this is the way to make friends. Like if you act like who people expect you to be, you would have friends. So from the outside looking in, you would think I have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people wanted to be around me, talk to me, like pick my brain. You know, a lot of people just wanted to be around me. They wanted the energy and the vibe that I gave. But when the music fades, I didn't have anyone that, like, I could call, like, a confidant in the way that I have friends now.
Yeah.
There was no one I could properly be vulnerable to, that I could be myself with unapologetically. So that continued. I think it was, like, late in university. One friend saw me and she said, all this drama you give everybody outside, I want to know the real you. That's the first time I actually asked myself, like, who is even the real me, Sif? I was pressured into a lot of things. I was getting into trouble, like detention, community service, because whatever my friends are doing, like, I'm down. You want to go to church, I'm down. But you want to break HOPC's car, let's go and break his car. If the teacher did anything to you, you want to break their window, let's go and break it. Like, regardless of the consequence, I didn't necessarily have, like, my own values or principles, I'm going to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. You guys can go ahead without me. Because I was so scared that if I presented myself with my values and my principles, they would say, okay, then you're no longer our friend. Ah, I'll just die. You know, it was like almost the worst thing you could say to me then.
Yeah.
You know, I was a people pleaser. Like, I felt peer pressure, like a joke. That was even what stopped me from being a tomboy. Somebody came to meet me and she was like, would have been friends with you, but you're just like really a tomboy. And like, we don't know how to deal. Like, some people actually think that you're gay. And so I had to change my whole MO, you know. And it, like I said, it was up until, you know, and I'm saying third year of university, but really actually I was 18.
Yeah.
You know, but that was when I now said, you know what? Like, fuck niggas, man. Excuse my French. I'm going to do what I want unapologetically. Call me loud. Call me obnoxious. Call me too much. I don't care anymore. I'm not muting myself for anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, that was when I found, like, proper expression to dress how I want, behave how I want. Like, for me, looking back,
yeah,
I feel like I would have had more authentic experiences. Yeah. You're mentioning people's names and you're feeling good. I don't have that.
Because
I never had a genuine connection with someone. Because throughout, I was playing a part.
Yeah.
So it was almost like throughout my childhood, it was a movie. That's where I'm saying that there's an advantage.
Okay.
Not necessarily that, okay, you are just who you are and unapologetically and everyone can see through you, but that you were able to form genuine connections with people, because those people actually knew that, okay, Osefan is the kind of person that almost she likes horrors or she likes thrillers, but nobody even knew that, because I was uncomfortable with saying anything I liked. I was uncomfortable with just being who I was.
I did music before.
So, yeah. Do you know how many interests? That's what I'm thinking. Like, do you know how many interests I would have been able to pursue if I actually didn't care what anybody thought. If I wasn't so keen on, oh, I don't want to lose friends. There's so many interests I would have pursued then that I will now have like experiences to look back on. But when I look back, it's so hard for me to get memories because most of them were not genuine. Yeah. The moment I leave the room, I've forgotten what happened because I was just playing a part. Like, it was a role. And now that I'm done with the movie, curtains are closed. I'm just back to who I am, you know, back in my shell where nobody, you know. So she was the first person to say like, I'm seeing you today, you're this way. I'm seeing you tomorrow, you're this way. Like, who are you? We can't place you. And that, for me, from when she asked that question, that was a question I never asked myself. It was almost like, because I was doing that with my parents already, I started doing it in school. It was almost like, this is who I am. But it really wasn't. I wasn't forming genuine connections and genuine friendships until I became a semblance of who I felt like I was. But I mean, peer pressure is still ingrained in us, right? We call it a different word now. We call it conditioning. But there's certain decisions that people want to make and certain things they want to do with their lives that they don't do because what will people say? Yeah. Like, what will my friends say? What will my guys that know me?
Or even things, you know, that you do just because.
Just because, yeah.
And sometimes you don't even know it. You actually do.
Comes in different forms.
Sometimes it's even subconscious. You don't even know that that's what you're doing.
What you're doing is, after you've done it, you now look back, you're like, Omo, that's not even something that I would do on a normal day.
Actually.
Anyway, that being said, if you could say anything to your younger self, to the girl child that you were little or say, what would you say to her if you had the chance?
Thank you for being courageous. There's certain things that I don't fully remember, and there's certain things that I remember. And I don't know where that courage is right now, but it did take courage to do those things, to explore those gifts.
Yeah.
There's so many gifts that I did explore as a child.
Yeah.
And interest, right? And I think that that girl made me, or rather still makes me want to live.
Yeah.
You know, still makes me believe that I can still reach for things. That I can still do things. So I would say thank you, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for all the times that you even lied. But, you know, for all the risk that you took, because I think that's because of her that I dare to do some things now.
Yeah.
You know? That's wild. I mean, I wish so many things had happened.
Yeah.
You know? I wish so many things had happened. I wish that, you know, there's so many moments that she has had. You know, there's certain things that I'd wish for. Thank you for staying as safe as you could. You do that in life, because you can put yourself for this.
As in, sometimes I just look back and say, thank God for God, though.
You know, I'm not kidding. When I'm thanking God sometimes, when I go back to those my childhood memories that I can remember, I honestly ask myself, what were you thinking? Like, are you mad? Did you really think this through? Like, there's so many things that I recently, last week or so, I went back to where I'd grown up, if I don't know, visited.
Yeah.
And interestingly, we went through, you know, the barracks where the command was.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just, my sister and I were just like reminiscing on like certain things, you know. And I just realized that really assuming risk that I took.
That was unnecessary.
That was, totally unnecessary. Mm-hmm. There's so many times that I was out at night. God knows what. You know, and then I remember I'm thinking like, feed the blood of Jesus.
God just look at you. Self-inflicted injury.
But the life of me, what were you looking for?
Yeah.
You know, but I'm grateful.
Yeah.
I'm grateful that I did that.
If I could say anything to my younger self, it would probably be, I see you.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the things that I did was for some level of attention. Everyone expected me to know everything, and everyone expected me to be everything. Sometimes I think, like, does my mom know that she's talking to a 6-year-old? How do you leave rice on the fire and go and watch cartoon? Like, I'm 6, bro.
That's how I live.
I'm 6, bro. I'm gonna leave things on the fire and go watch cartoon because that's my priority at the time. But I felt very unseen as a child, and which is why, in a way, I always wanted to be an adult quickly, because I wanted the reality to match up with people's expectations. I see you because there are many times where I needed to be seen and I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And the darkness proper enveloped me and caused a lot of trauma that I'm still having to heal. But also I see you because there's many things that I regret definitely doing because I wanted to be seen, you know, because I wanted the attention, you know.
Yeah.
But looking back now, I just... Those are words that I wish somebody had said to me. And now I'm saying it to myself.
Yeah.
Complete, you know, the complete cycle. I see you rest, dear. It don't do. Okay, so to round off, let's talk about healing. Now, a lot of people that are going to listen to our podcast are no longer children.
Yeah.
But there's a direct correlation between the decisions that we make now and how we were conditioned when we were younger.
Mm.
The things we were exposed to. You mentioned some before we started recording, like neglect, emotional abuse,
physical abuse,
abuse, and things that have happened to us. And I was telling you about that book that I read, like, It Did Not Start With You. I recommend that book to anyone that loves to read. It Did Not Start With You highlights how a lot of the things that you say, this is just who I am, this is just who I am, is really not who you are, but it's who you had to become. Because of the things that you were exposed to. So if you were to talk to anyone now and you wanted them to like be encouraged to heal their inner child, you know, what advice would you give them kind of? That's like, ooh, you know what I'm just realizing?
Sure.
So in my language, when we want to sigh, we actually use the word sigh.
Really?
Oh my God, like, I can't believe you, oh, you're so poetic. Like, you know, when people are like, ah, for us, like, that expression of, like, either extreme fatigue or extreme shock is like, sigh. Yeah. I see you. I'm
going to be using that now.
Oh, no. I'm just, ooh, it's the self-revelation for me. I love languages, you guys.
This is going to be a very long podcast.
It's going to be very long. But, yeah, healing your inner child.
Healing my inner child. I don't want to lose my inner child. First of all, I never, like at 90, I still want to be a child. I still want to play like a child, laugh like a child.
It's necessary.
Act stupidly on the road like a child.
It's necessary.
You know, I still want to do everything like a child. Possibly even breastfeed my child like a child. But get knowledge.
Yeah.
Understand why, what was really going on in your childhood.
Yeah.
And whether it's from your parents, whether it's from, you know, how what you were believed or what you're exposed to, but get knowledge. And I say this because I didn't even know that I was emotionally detached.
Yeah.
So all of that, I mean, not like getting pressured, it was really, I was emotionally detached.
Yeah.
You know, and it took very recently
to
even realize that, oh, wait, why was I emotionally detached? Why was I so quick to move on?
Yeah.
You know, why was I so quick to block things and nothing gets to me? Like, and I'm saying because I did go through shit.
Yeah.
You know, especially emotionally and verbally. But it was just because, you know, it just wouldn't get to me.
Yeah.
You know, it just wouldn't. Like, I just wouldn't let it. And I said to...
And that in itself is a trauma response.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it was when I was reading up on... So interestingly, I've seen something my sister wrote one time. And I was like, whoa, wait. Were you feeling this way too? You know, and then... And I started to read up. Thanks be to God that I started to read up on what emotional detachment was.
Yeah.
And what causes that, you know, in a child, you know. And started to realize why I was emotionally detached.
Verbal abuse. You know. Just guessing.
You know, it was even more about parenting and who was present and who wasn't.
Yeah.
And... Also, just if you do away with one and you don't even know what it is, yeah, automatically, subconsciously, you can do away with anything, anyone. And so I started to then learn more and learn more about how to walk around that, right? How to reconcile relationships. Still learning, honestly.
It's a journey.
And then another thing is forgive your parents.
Or more.
That's the one truth that I think that a lot of us
fight.
It took a while, but forgive your parents. And I say this because people just do as much as they know or as they're exposed to or yeah. as they are willing to accept a change for.
Yeah.
So it's one of two things, or one of many things anyways. But if they're not willing to change, then they're not willing to change.
Yeah.
They're human beings. And the best thing that you can do for yourself is learn how to learn.
Yeah.
And learn how to accept change. Right. It might be hurtful, but these people are going to die before you.
Facts.
Which is rare. And sometimes you realize that just looking at them, if you really, you know, try to dig in as to why they did certain things,
yeah,
why they behaved in certain ways, you look back and see what their parents did or what conditions they grew up in. Don't forget that it's even beyond how they were raised. Also, what experiences they encountered while growing up.
Yeah.
So we're a sum up of all experiences, even the ones you did not leave. Somebody told you just that next thing.
Before you know it, empathy.
Excuse me, empathy. Or, yeah, you know, and you carry that along with you as well. And yeah. interestingly, you react to that when you are in a position to raise somebody. So what happened to your friend, you sort of like don't want your child to go through that. It didn't even happen to you. Don't know what your friend did. But somehow you told yourself that, you know what,
my girl you not go do my picking.
Do you understand? So it might be hard, right? But the best thing you can do for yourself is to accept that your life is now your own and begin to walk around that journey of learning about yourself and the things that you do not want to see. Now, it's not the easiest. I'm not even going to lie. But you need to. And if you can not see your case as the worst, I don't know if that makes any sense. So even if you came from a dysfunctional family, which many of us did, but the truth is, I'm not making excuses for it, yeah. but it's not the worst, you know.
It so, doesn't happen.
Yeah. Like, you've grown, right? The best you can do for yourself is start to rework the quality of life that you want for yourself. Ooh. That's the best you can. Like, you can just start to rework that.
Preacher.
And maybe surround yourself with, well, people who would help encourage and not make you feel like, oh, your life is because of this. Because as much as I know,
yeah.
there's no family that's perfect. As much as I know,
actually,
there's no family that's perfect. Actually. As much as I, maybe tomorrow, maybe today I'll find out something else. But there's no family. There's no family that's perfect. Everyone with their own peculiarities.
Yeah,
and that can be in any form. But yeah, get to know for yourself. What it is that trauma is. If you want to get help, get help. If you want to be in an environment. If you're Christian, you know, I mean. Even beautiful, because the Holy Spirit can help you walk around that, and He'll keep helping you walk around that. And if you want to ask questions as well. I found myself literally sit, you know, my mom down, say, okay, why did you like this? You know, why didn't you do this? Why didn't? And she might not have an answer, but I've just come to that if you no answer, actually, I don't ask it. I won't ask.
Yeah.
You know, if you can have that conversation with your parents as well to understand where they're coming from, fine. If you can ask your family relatives to see. What kind of environments, you know, they grew up in, you know, and what would have, just so that it gives you some sort of understanding. Yeah. Not necessarily because they're going to say, it just gives you an understanding of why, you know, and yeah, and understand that, like, accept your life as yours now, and your responsibility is to enjoy quality of life that God has given you. And you don't want to die being the person that is some total of what somebody else's experience has reflected into you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be that person. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be that person. So as much as you can, you know, just do it one step at a time, really, as much as you can. I mean, this is what I'm doing. I can't tell you if it has worked or not.
Exactly. Because
I'm not going to the end of my life yet.
Exactly.
But I'm just saying that this is what I'm trying out, right? And if you want to try that out as well, then it's fine, you know. Yeah, really.
That's honestly, everything you've said, I second 100%. Seek understanding, find support around you, and take it one day at a time.
Yeah.
The only thing that I can think of is understanding that healing is not a linear journey.
Yeah.
I'm one person that I've tried a lot to like confront a lot of things that happened to me as a child, not just from my parents, but even from the school environment, some of the bullying I'd experienced and some of these very, very vivid memories that sometimes come into my head. And sometimes you catch yourself when you're about to do something and you're like, that's my trauma. That's my trauma.
Yeah.
But other times you don't see it. And the trauma already causes damage before you can. And it's just understanding that healing is not a straightforward journey. Mm. Sometimes you're moving really, really good and things are going really well. And sometimes you make a decision or you do something and it just takes you back.
That's so true.
Like, and understanding that it's a part of the process, really. Self-kindness, self-compassion.
Yeah.
I keep coming back to that. One of the most profound things I've ever heard someone say is that self-realization is probably the hardest journey you ever go through, because once you start to look inwards, you see that a lot of things you hate about people, you get down.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
You did, buddy.
Honestly, there's something that I'm starting to believe, and it's true. The things you hate the most about your parents
reflect. It's in you. So self-realization is a very hard journey. You're going to unlock certain things in your character. You're going to be confronted with them in such a way that sometimes you even feel like a hypocrite.
Yeah.
Like, how was I able to come for those people as hard as I did when I'm not better than they are.
Yeah.
But self-kindness, self-compassion, cut yourself slack.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of things that happened to us as children, we didn't have control over, but now we do. And now it's our responsibility, like Ose said, to make sure that what was poured into us is not our story.
Yeah.
The names that people called us is not who we are. And we are more than just products of our environment. Mm. The ability to take charge of your thoughts and of your feelings is a journey that everyone I encourage to embark on. There's nothing like being in control of your own mind, not letting your mind control you. Because we are spiritual, we're going to call it self-control, obviously, and a sound mind, which is something that the Holy Spirit gives us as a gift. But I think even without the Holy Spirit, it's harder, but you can achieve it. You can achieve understanding your thought processes, gaining knowledge as to where they come from, why you do the things you do, why you say the things you say, and making a decision if it aligns with the values that you want for your life. If you want to be a sucky person, go ahead. If you want to be a changed person, go ahead. But at least let it come from a place of consciousness.
You're born looking like your parents or something, but you die looking like your decisions.
Ooh.
So you're born, quote unquote, you're born and you grow.
You're like a blank canvas at that point. Yeah.
So you're born looking like your parents' decision or your parents, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But the end of that is you die looking like your decisions.
Yeah.
Right. So whether or not, you know, what they've done in your 20-something years of your life is control it, or in your 15 years or whatever number of years they've had to just like influence that.
Yeah.
At the point where you start to make decisions, the product of those decisions is how you're actually going to die.
Ooh.
You know, and that for me really, it not even scares me. It just puts this consciousness that, you know what, your life is yours
at
the end of the day. And maybe someone has ruined it for the longest.
Yes.
Quote unquote. But you can take that back.
Yeah.
You can take that back. And it's, like Paul said, just begin to rework your mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the easiest to...
Ah, yeah, girl.
And nobody, except somebody who actually died, you actually don't know what the full outcome of all the experiments
that you're doing is.
You're just...
What you strive for really is consciousness.
Yeah.
It's so that you don't get to a point where you're just doing stuff.
Yeah.
And you're saying, this is just who I am. This is just, you know, without ever asking why. What's your why?
Hmm.
What's your why? Why do you want the things that you want? Why are you the way that you are? What you don't want is to live a life and then grow old and say, ah, that's not the life I wanted to live. It wasn't my fault. It is what they did to me when I was younger. It's you don't want that. So it's just, you strive for consciousness. I swear, it's not a result-based. Yeah. Is it a result-based journey? It's not a result-based journey.
I think
it's just consciousness and feeling like you have a semblance of code over who you are.
I think for me, the goal would be when I die or when I get older, I don't want to be that person who never understood what it was like to be her true self.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, it's one thing to say, oh, this is who I am. Because then I used to, like, yeah, oh, this is who I am. Nobody can change me.
Yeah.
Like, that's not who you are. That's
I am that I am.
You know, that's
who they've made you.
Yeah, because, you know, for whatever reason, like, there is who you can become.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that if you then decide that you don't want to become, you know, then that's another thing.
Then that's still a decision, you know. At least you're consciously making that decision rather than just living life in automatic.
Like helpless.
Yeah.
Like, or not even knowing at all that this you could have been another better version or live a better quality of life, you know, that kind of thing. So, I don't know, it's just scary to just think that you live on earth and not live.
Yeah. Ah, but one of the things that you said that are really profound, like, forgive your parents. Ah, that's a hard, difficult one for me. I always say it's, honestly, I say it's my diary. I've probably never said it out loud, but if Mumsy was not fighting and battling cancer, I wouldn't have forgiven her. I promise you, like, God has a way of doing things, you know. Because a lot of the things that she told me, I could understand. When she told me, I'm parenting from a place of fear because, you know, I'd never done this before. You were my first. Yeah, you were my first, you know. I had to be sure that you turned out right so that the rest could turn out right, you know, and all of that. I could understand that. But there were certain decisions she also made, like, I was like, bruh. Just say, you know, adopt me. But forgiving your parents is not a favor that you do to them. It's a favor to yourself. Oh, the wholeness I felt, like the peace that I felt, you know, it was almost like hugging myself.
Yeah.
It was like hugging myself. Forgiving my mom was like, I picked that child and I just hugged her. I went, ooh, ooh, that feeling. It's not for anybody else, I promise you. And I know I'm going to get that same feeling when I finally forgive my daddy. You know, it's hard.
Yeah, very.
It's hard.
Very.
But I promise you, when you get to the other side, the reward. I always say that nothing good comes easy. If it comes easy, it's not sweet. It's really not sweet. That's why pounded yam is still premium. It's still premium swallow. Because it's hard. It's hard to pound yam without cocoa.
Not just pound yam.
I see to pound smooth. Yam. Do you know the one that draws?
You know there's
Poundo.
Pando,
there's pounding yam.
Yeah.
There's the one from Yam Pounder.
You know? But to say pounded yam.
Friend, how do we get here? How do we get here? Yeah, okay, yeah. Nothing good comes easy, you know? So the hardest journeys that we go on, self-realization, forgiveness, healing, all of those things are hard and they're difficult. But the reward, it's just amazing. I promise you. It's just amazing. If my mom passed on without us ever coming to I don't know what would be left. Like, there's so many things that I was able to tell her. I was able to express that. And like what I said, the right way is that we're going to bury them.
Yeah.
You just don't know how long they're going to be around. So do it with haste as well. Let them be some urgency to it. Like, reach out to that father that walked out, the one that beat your mom until your mom had to run away with you. Reach out to him. Like, reach out to the one that tried to sell you into sexual slavery.
I don't know.
You know, reach out. Because the thing is, you're not, when you forgive somebody, gives you the peace, but it leaves them in turmoil. Because they are the ones that were meant to go on their knees and beg.
Yeah.
But there's something about being the one to reach out. I promise you, like, I did this recently with a friend. Like, her dad's own is like completely mad because he tried to sell her and her sisters for trafficking, right? Because he was owing some people money. And they're like, oh, you have three daughters, just bring them, we'll take them to Italy. And finally, it was actually a testimony. Like, the three of them were able to escape. They lived in the bushes for about 2 days. And then one very kind woman that sells tomato found them, took them in and raised them. You know, because their mom had died at the time. So she's who they call mother now. And she's the only parent, you know. Yeah. So I did it earlier with her this year. And I promise you guys, like, there's a difference about her aura. Like, having let her dad go. She literally said three sentences to him. She said, I've hated you for so long for what you did to us. But without that, we wouldn't have met our mom. And I want you to know that we are fine. There's no need for you to reach out to us. There's no need for you to act like we exist. Just act like you sold us all those years ago. But in my heart, I've let you go. You know, it wasn't a long conversation. And the conversation happened on my phone so that the man won't have a number. You know, but I can't lie to you. I've been around her in the past 2 months. Like, her aura, you guys, like, this thing works. Yeah. Forgiveness works. It's hard. Nobody's saying it's easy.
Yeah.
But they're your parents. God does not make mistakes. You know, and we are called to honor them regardless. Not to be friends with them or to keep the relationship going, but to give them that place that they have. So reach out, forgive, let them go. Let that hurt go. The people that bullied you when you were younger, the senior that slapped you, let it go. You know, honestly, those are my final words. I have nothing else to say before I start getting emotional.
Me too. I'm literally trying to hold back. I think we've had a podcast.
Yeah. That brings us to the end of the podcast. I'm sure you guys have missed us and we've just come in with a banger. Woo! And to think I was nervous when we started. Oh my gosh, we have like over an hour worth of content. But
we'll break this episode.
We definitely do. We'll definitely figure something out. We can't leave it like this. Please. You will sleep. But anyway, thank you so much for listening and for spending this time with us. I feel like my inner child is happy because we're having this conversation. I don't know how to explain it. Yeah.
When you said to say something to your inner child or to your
When you said thank you, my inner child was like, ooh.
I never want
to tell me that too. I'm like, that's not what I'm telling you.
But thank you guys. And thank you guys for reaching out as well.
Yeah.
When you did not, we'll pretend that you reached out.
No, some people reached out to, but I feel like the reaching out was like more of insult. When you started a YouTube channel, this is what you did. We're following you. You start posting. Now you're done podcast. We say we want to encourage you. Exactly. You're not posting.
So the reaching out that I'm pretending is that you actually cannot say, are you okay?
Yeah.
What happened to me? But that's what people
Let's
say.
Let's pretend that that's Let's what pretend they pretend said. Yeah. Because our friends, people are mean. People are really mean.
And now we posted a podcast. Somebody even sent me a meme. I don't know if she sent it to you, but I'll tell you who. And she's like, when you're your best friend, people are starting a podcast. What is this saying?
It's not fair, you guys. It's not fair. Life has been lifey, man. You don't get it.
But yeah.
The heart is willing.
But the flesh is weak. We're back now.
And we're not going to drop the ball. I mean, we'll drop the ball again, knowing humanity. But even if we drop the ball, like, this is a commitment we've made. So we'll always come back. I mean, the righteous fall 7 times, but they get up 8.
Yeah.
preacher. Drop that scripture.
You know?
Drop that scripture. It's all right. All right. Let's actually get off this podcast. It's enough.
It's been real, guys.
It's been real. Happy Children's Day. Bye, guys.